We're holding on page Mem Gimel in Bava Basra, three line, the third to last line of the narrow lines, middle of Ois Beis. We started learning yesterday about the story of Hordus. He was originally a slave of the Hashmonaim, then he revolted against them and eventually killed all of them except for, we said there was one girl that he planned to marry, and she threw herself off the roof, and we discussed what happened after that. So now the Gemara continues, Omar. So now Hordus said to himself, man Dorish, who is it who darshins that the pasuk says, Mikerev Achecha Tosim Alacha Melech, from among your brothers, from among your fellow Jews, you have to appoint, you should appoint over yourselves a king, meaning, in other words, that, so you can't appoint a Goy as a king, but who darshins it, Tosfos explains, specifically, who darshins it to say that it will exclude Avodim. Because after all, an Eved is sort of Ochil, is sort of Mikerev Achecha, he is Chayiv in some mitzvahs, after all, but who is it that darshins otherwise, and say that no, Mikerev Achecha means Mimuvcho Sheba Achecha, means from among the choicest of your brothers, of your fellow Jews, so therefore somebody who has proper Yichus, which is to say not an Eved. So who is it who darshins like that? He says to himself, Rabbanon. It's the Chachamim who darshin that and say that an Eved such as me cannot be a king. So he didn't want that. He didn't want them to go and oppose him, especially Eitz Yosef points out they might depose him, they might kill him, precisely because Mikerev Achecha, for that matter, of course, there's also the fact that he had killed all those people, and they could consider him unsuitable because of that. So he got up and killed all of the Chachamim, Shirei or Shavke, the Bava ben Buta, the Mesav, or the Mishkal Eitzemine. He went and killed all of the Chachamim, and now not all, Tosfos points out that there are some Chachamim who stayed alive. We find the Bnei Beseder were there. There was Hillel. Through the Rambam, the Gemara mentions Chachamim who helped him. Just a minute. It's on page Mem Gimel in Bava Basra, yeah. But he left over Bava ben Buta, the Mesav, the Mishkal, Eitzemine, in order to be able to get advice from him. He wants to have him as an advisor. Why Bava ben Buta? Particularly, Ben Yehoyada refers to a Gemara in Nazir that tells about it, in Nedarim rather, that tells about how tremendously, how patient Bava ben Buta was. There was one time a time when, there was a time when there was a whole story, the Gemara tells in the Nedarim, there a whole story involving a husband and wife that had a misunderstanding between them, and it wound up that she went and took two candlesticks and then broke them over Bava ben Buta's head, and he didn't get angry, so therefore, so he knew that Bava ben Buta particularly is going to be somebody who's not going to try to take revenge against him for what he did to the Chachamim. Nevertheless, even he, Ahadulai Klila de Yoli, he put on him a crown of Yoli. A Yoli is some kind of creature like a hedgehog or a porcupine or something like that. It has very prickly skin. And with that, he put out Bava ben Buta's eyes. Couple of different explanations why he did that. One of them is Ben Yehoyada gives two reasons. First of all, this way he couldn't possibly ever be a member of the Sanhedrin. The halacha is, which Hordus was aware of, it was in today's Shalosh HaParakim of Rambam, in fact, that a person who is blind is not able to serve on the Sanhedrin. So this way he has no concern that they might ever appoint Bava ben Buta, the head of the Sanhedrin, and then go and judge him, Hordus, and depose him or kill him. Another point he says is it was meant to test Bava ben Buta. Is he gonna remain loyal to Hurdus, or is he going to go and try to undermine him because of what he did to him? He gives another explanation that Ben Yehoyada says is not necessarily, put a crown of porcupine skin on his head. He gives an explanation that it was a regular crown, like he's pretending to honor him, but he smeared it with some kind of ointment that causes blindness if it gets into the eyes, and therefore, sure enough, it had that effect. It dripped down above him over his forehead and got into his head and got into his eyes and blinded him. By the way, we know of two of the Chachamim who were blind. You have Bob ben Butta, who was a Tana, and you have later on Rav Sheshes, who was an Amora, and the Gemara mentions in a couple of places that he was blind as well. It's brought in Svarim. Bava is the Beis Aleph is Atbash is Sheshes. The Beis has become Shins. The Aleph becomes a Tuf. So therefore, like Rav Sheshes, therefore was a Gilgul or like a completion of Bob ben Butta. Rabbi Yosef, I don't know. I mean, he's not connected with that. It's true. Rabbi Yosef went blind, but I don't know if anybody makes that connection. So Yom Echad also the Yosef Kamei. One day, then Hurdus wants to test Bava ben Butta's loyalty, so he comes and sits in front of him. Amalei says, Chozi Mar, come see, Master. And you might even say that this is a very insulting way to start out. Come see when he's blind. But anyway, Abdabisha, this evil servant, referring to Hurdus, my Kavod, look what he did. Kam Kaflinu Lakula Rabbanan, he killed all the Chachamim, the Kaflinu Lakula Marvase, he had previously killed all of his masters, all of the Hashmonoim. What a horrible guy he is. Ibn Yaakov points out, it's a very serious thing. You have a pasuk in, Eicha, that says, "In Yehorig b'Mikdash Hashem Koyin v'Navi." How could it be that a Koyin and a Navi are killed in the Beis Mikdash? Here you have, he had killed all the Hashminoim who are Koyinim, and he killed the Chachamim. In his time, there were no more Neviim, but they're tantamount to Neviim. So look what a horrible guy he is. Amalei, so Bava ben Butta says, "I hear what you're saying. My Eved Lai, what do you want me to do to him? It's not like I have the ability to do anything physical to him." Amalei, so Hurdus pretending to be, remember, this is Hurdus, first of all, Bava ben Butta is blind, he couldn't see who he's speaking with, but also, I guess, probably Hurdus disguised his voice or something, whatever, he made himself appear like he's a regular Yid who was out to get Hurdus. Amalei, Nilakti Emar, so he's testing Bava ben Butta, he says, "You should curse him." Amalei, so Bava ben Butta says, "I can't." Ksiv, the Pasuk says, "Gamba Mada Acha, even in your mind, Melech Al Tekalo, do not curse a king." So I'm not gonna curse him. Marsha points out that actually, Hurdus is taking the view if he himself is an Eved, and we know there's a Klola connected with Avadim, Oruknan Eved Avadim. So therefore, so by all means, you should put a curse on him. As it is, he deserves it as an Eved. And on top of that, when you consider everything that he did, but Bava ben Butta is saying no, because the fact is now he's a king, and therefore the Pasuk says you shouldn't curse him. Amalei, so Hurdus says, "So what's the problem? I love Melechu. He's not really a king. He's a slave who made himself king. He's a dictator, basically." Amalei, so Bava says, "Fine. The lo yehela osher ba'alma. Fine, but after all, even if he's only a rich person, the same pasuk continues. Over chadre mishkavcha al tekalal osher. Even in your bedroom, do not curse a rich person." So I'm not going to say even on the, so just on the grounds of that is a reason not to curse him. So then he answers him, Amalei v'lo yehel nasi. Okay, so maybe maybe you should consider him a nasi. Well, nasi ba'am chaloisar. The pasuk does say, don't curse a nasi, a king among your people. So even if you don't consider him a full-fledged melech, but even if we consider him a nasi, then nevertheless, so he's smaller than a melech, but greater than an usher on the face of it. Bava tells him, you can't. If there's nasi ba'am follow so, you're not able to curse a nasi either. Amalei, but Hurdus was knowledgeable enough to know, but oisin ma'isa amcha. Fine, but that pasuk applies only when he's acting the way a yid should act. This Hurdus is not acting the way a yid should act. So, fine, you might argue that you might argue he can't curse him because of his king, but he's not really a king. You might argue because he's an usher. Fine, let's set that aside. But the fact is, let's call him a nasi. Let's say he's, this is how Eitz Yosef explains it. He's lesser than a nasi. He's lesser than a melech. He's greater than an usher. And when he's not usher ma'isa amcha, then we see the pasuk is implying you're allowed to curse him. How much more so an usher if he's not acting usher ma'isa amcha? So therefore, you have good reason, Bava, to go and curse him. So nevertheless, in other words, the Maharsha learns differently. Maharsha says, therefore it is, that, okay, it may be perfectly true that when any of these people are not Oysa Maisa Amcha, then you're allowed to curse them technically. Nevertheless, it's still, Shloima is giving you an Eitz Toiva. Nevertheless, better don't curse a king and don't curse a rich person. You still might get in trouble. Amalei, so Bava says, fine, maybe lahalocha, you have a point, but it's still not a good idea, again, because Shlomo warns us against us. Mr. Pinamine, I'm afraid of him. He may find out what I did. Amalei, Ika inish the shama milsa, somebody may hear it, the ozla moidele, and will go and inform on me to hordu, somalai hashtam leke inish gabon. So as the hordu says, right now there's nobody here. That part in parenthesis is not in the printed Gemara. He just says, hordu says, leke inish gabon, there's nobody with us. We're safe. Da nova akia sivna, it's only you and I sitting together. Maharsha points out, you know, like this, the Pasuk mentions don't curse them when you're in your bedroom. Fine, because as the expression goes, the walls have ears. So somebody might be standing on the other side of the wall and putting his ear to the wall and hear, and therefore you could get in trouble. But Hurdus tells him, we're not even in a room right now. We're out in the field. There's nobody around to be able to overhear us. We find al derech that it says that Yaakov, when he needed to conference with Rachel and Leah to talk to them about that he wants to, that they want to leave Haran, then he called them out to the field, so this way nobody should overhear. The Gemara mentions in Brachas that this is a very good practice to do precisely for that reason, because the walls have ears. So anyway, so Hurdus says to Bavim and Mutter, well, then only you and I are here. What's the problem? Amalei, nevertheless, Bava says, Ksiv, that same Pasuk that says that don't curse the king and don't curse the rich person, the Pasuk continues, Ki oifa shamayim yolech hasakol, the birds of the heavens will transport the voice, v'gomer, and so forth, and then the winged creatures, the Pasuk continues, v'al knafayim yagid dover. So in other words, even the birds, they pass along the message, and therefore I'll get in trouble. So at this point, Hurdus is out of arguments. Omalei, so he says to Baba, Anahu, this is actually I am Hurdus. I was all this time trying to test you. If I had realized that you Rabbanan, that you Chachamim are so tzniusim, or so circumspect and so careful, I wouldn't have killed you in the first place. The whole reason was, we just said, he killed the Chachamim because he figured that they were going to oppose his rule. But if I had realized that you're so extra careful that you'll go to the ultimate degree to not curse him, and even though, as Maharsha says before, that an Eved, as it, in and of himself, is already under the klala, so I wouldn't have killed them. I wouldn't have killed you, Chachamim. Now, what should that person, meaning I, what should I do to fix up? I can't bring him back to life. Omalei. So, Baba tells him, "Hu kiba oda shel olam, you put out the light of the world, which is the Chachamim, who teach Torah to the Jewish people. You should go and be involved with the light of the world. What does that mean? Hu kiba oda shel olam rabbanan. The Chachamim are called the light of the world. Dechtiv ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. The Torah is the mitzvah is a lamp, it is a lamp or a candle, and the Torah is light. Maharsha explains, you're missing both of you, really. You can have, sometimes there can be a sighted person at night is not able to see, but he still has the faculty of sight. Vice versa, you can have a blind person by day. Here you have both. The Torah and the Tamar HaChamim have both been removed. So you're not going to be so therefore he's telling him in other words in effect Maharsha says that he's telling him you'll be able to fix up one of the two things. Therefore the Gemara has two different versions what he told him. The first version is let's focus on the light. Let's focus on the light. You put out the light of the Torah, therefore go and be involved with the light of the world, namely Yelech V'Yasek Ba'Oda Shel Olam Beis HaMikdash. That would be the Beis HaMikdash. Dichtiv V'Naru Elav Kol HaGoyim, as the Pasuk says, all the Goyim will stream to it, will stream to the Beis HaMikdash, but the word V'Naru is also related to the word Nahura, which in Aramaic means light, so all of the goyim will find their light, I guess. Will find their light in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, we see that the Beis Hamikdash is called the light of the world. So that's one version. Ikadamri, another version. Another version is he tells him, Husime Einashal Olam, you put out the eyes of the world, namely Rabbanan, we see that the Chachamim are called the Einei Ha'eda, the eyes of the congregation, because they tell us where to go and what to do. Yelech v'yasek, the Einei Shalolam, go and involve yourself with fixing up the Beis Hamikdash, the eye of the world, which is the Beis Hamikdash. Dichtiv, the passage says, Hinin v'chalas mikdashi, Hashem tells the Navi Yechezkel to warn the Jewish people that I'm going to desecrate my holy place. Go'in ozchem, this is the pride of your strength. Machmad einechem, the beloved thing of your eyes. So we see that the Beis Hamikdash is associated with the eyes. So again, Maharshal says, the vote is, in other words, you, Hudus, caused that there was no light and that were blind. So it's like a blind person at night. There's no possible way you can fix both things up, but at least you can do one or the other, and therefore the two different versions are what he tells him, that you can rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and with that you'll at least partially make up what you did wrong over here by killing the Chachamim. And as the Gemara is going to point out further on, as we talked about yesterday, the Beis Hamikdash by this time was over 300 years old and had been through a lot, so it was well overdue for a reconstruction. In the first Beis Hamikdash, we find, for example, that as we learned yesterday, the second Beis Hamikdash stood longer than the first one, and the first one, there were two major renovations during it. There was one by Yehoyash, about 125 years after it had been built, and then there was another one about 200 years after that by Yeshayahu. Here, the Beis Hamikdash had never been renovated in all these 300 odd years, so it was well overdue. So he tells him he should do that. Amalei, so who just says, Mr. Pinim in Mahosa? I'm afraid of the government. Hudus himself was basically a puppet king of the Romans. By that point, the Romans had dominated Eretz Yisrael for a couple of decades already, and they had installed Hudus, and Hudus became king. He bribed them a lot, and they had officially confirmed him as king, but he's still answerable to the Roman emperor. So then I'm afraid of them. They're not going to give me permission. Amalei, so Bava tells him, Shadar Shlicha, here's what you should do. Send a messenger to Rome that you're officially asking permission. Lazel Shata Barucha, he should take a year getting there. Vela'ak of Shata, he should spend a year there, so drag things out, the negotiations, drag out how the different officials that he has to visit, and so on and so forth. Vela'adar Shata, and then he should take a year coming back. As all that is going on, that'll be enough time that you can tear down the old building and rebuild it. During the whole time, by the way, that Amram tells us in Hilchos Beis Abchira, you're allowed to bring korbanos even when the heichal is not standing, so they could still continue the avodah all those years, even while the construction is going on. But this way, this way, you'll have time to rebuild the whole thing. That's the reason why we got this in the Gemara over here, is because again, the Gemara had brought halacha that when it comes to a shul, you can't tear down an old shul before you build a new one, and the Gemara is going to eventually ask, so how could they do it over here with the Beis Hamikdash? So 3 years should be enough time. So Avon Hochi, so who just did that? Ki Osa, when the guy came back, Sholchule, they sent him. The Romans realized what had happened. That by the time the messenger had come back with an answer of no, then the job was already done. Well, Sholchule, they realize what's going on. They realize that he's stalling for time. So Sholchule, they sent him a message. Imloy Satarta. If you have not yet destroyed the old, if you have not yet demolished the old building, Altister, do not demolish it. Im Satarta, if you did already demolish it, Altivne, then don't rebuild it. Im Satarta over Nisa, if you've already demolished the old one and built the new one, then you should know, Avda Bisha, then you're a bad slave. Bosa de Avdin Mismalchin, where what? After you do something, you go and ask permission. You're supposed to ask permission before you start doing anything. What do they have against, Maharshal says, what do they have against him tearing down the old building? So Maharshal explains like this. The Romans were aware that the Beis Hamikdash, the building of it and the destruction of it can be done only by a king. The first Beis Hamikdash was done by Shlomo HaMelech. The second one was under the command of Koresh and later Dayavish. And the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash also had been done by Nebuchadnezzar, and the second one eventually by the Romans. And in each case, it was, as the passage says, Ba'adu Yippo, that it falls through a mighty one. It had to be a world superpower that would be the one to destroy the Beis Hamikdash. So the Romans were aware of that concept. Now they're telling him, you're not really a melech. You are really only an eved who made yourself into a dictator. So don't you dare tear down the old building, which would make that, which is tantamount to saying that you are a legitimate king, because you're not. And if you did already demolish it, then don't build it, which would also be, in other words, taking on yourself the name that you're king. And if you already did it, then yeah, then how do you do such a thing? Then we're angry at you that you would do such a thing in the first place, without asking permission. Ben Yehoyada gives a different take on it. He says the Romans knew that eventually they're destined to destroy the Beis Hamikdash. So they figured if Hurdus actually does tear down the building, then it could be that Milamilo bin Askayim, that now the Beis Hamikdash has been destroyed under the rule of the Romans, and they won't have their shot at it later on. So that's why that's another reason why they're telling him, don't tear it down. Anyway, they continue, Im Zaynach Allah, if you have your weapons on you, meaning if you're going to pride yourself on your weapons, that you were able to kill out all of the Hashmonaim, and therefore you think that you're mighty against us, you should know, Sifrach Khan, your records are here. Your Sefer Yuchsin, Loi Racha V'Loi Bar Racha, we know that you, Hurdus, are not a king and not a son of a king. Instead, Hurdus Abda, you're only Hurdus the Ebed, Klanyamis Abed, who made himself free, who killed off his masters and made himself free. Klanya is a word used in a number of places in the Gemara for a free person. Marshall explains the end of the message. What they were telling him is, here, you're trying to pretend as though you're a legitimate king, and therefore you hold that you can demolish or you can reconstruct the Beis Hamikdash, as we just said, which is something reserved only for kings. Now you're going to think you have your weapons, and you think that you're al derech like David HaMelech in his time. You've defeated all your enemies from all around, and now you're at peace. And in fact, Hurdus did have that in his times. So you think that now you've brought peace to your realm, and therefore you're entitled to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, because you're not really a king. You're not a king, and you're not a son of a king. And he explained, and Marshall finishes off, when he says, Klanya Misavid, doesn't just mean you made yourself free, it also means we can make what you have, we can make all of your wealth and all of everything free for the taking by the Roman army. Josephus in his histories also records that not long after that, for Hurdus basically was in deep trouble with the Romans, and he had to basically bribe his way out of it again. So the Gemara says, "Menolam dahai racha lishna de malchusahu." Where do we see that this word racha means a king? Now it's related to in Latin and from it in English. You have the word rex, which means a king. You have words from it in English, words that come from it in English like regal and royal. You have the word Reich, which in German means a government. But where do we see a source in Torah that the word racha is used for kingship? Dichtiv, we find David says about himself, I am today a Rach, anointed as king. Now, Rach doesn't mean that he was physically young. Marsha points out, when Shlomo became king, he's described as Rach, but fine, he was all of 12 years old. But David, when he first became king, was 30 years old. So he's not really Rach in that sense. But therefore, so we see that Rach is a word for a king. So David is saying, I'm now a king, I'm anointed as king. Nevertheless, he says there are certain people in the kingdom, in particular Yoav, who have tremendously great political power and a political following, and therefore it's hard for me to go up against them. Another source where Rach means a king, we find by Yosef, by Yikru, the son of Avrich, they called out before Yosef when he's traversing through Eretz Mitzrayim after being appointed as viceroy. They called before him Avrich, where one meaning of Avrich is, as Rashi mentions on the pasuk, father of the king, father and patron and leader of the king. Anyway, the point is that Hurdus somehow managed to get away with it, and even though as much as the Romans were angry with him for it, he had to buy his way out of it, but nevertheless, he still, the building was built, and it was very beautiful. Omru, the Chacham said, Mishal Ra Binyan Hurdus, anybody who did not see Hurdus' rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, Loi Ra Binyan Narmi Yamav, never saw a truly beautiful building. The Mai Banye, with what did he build it that it looked so beautiful? Omar Rabba, Va'avne Shisha u'Marmara. He built it using stones of Shisha and Marmara. Shisha and Marmara are both various types of marble. Rashi translates Shisha as greenish marble, and Marmara would be, and Marmara is white. So it was a beautiful pattern of green and white. Others say that he used three colors. He used blue and green and white. So it looks very beautiful with all those different colors of marble in it. Apik Sofa, Ma'il Sofa, the rows of stones alternately stuck out and stuck in, Ki Heche de la Kabel Sida, because that way you could put plaster on it. If you have a smooth wall, then you can't plaster it, and the point is, the next thing he wanted to do, as the Gemara says, is going to say he wanted to coat it with gold. Now, gold won't stick well to stone. We find in the first and the second Bate Mikdash, on the inside of the building, they have wood paneling. Yechezkel describes it for the third Bate Mikdash, as well, that there's wood paneling, and then attached to that is the gold, because gold will stick well to wood. Here, Hud was proposed to do the same thing using plaster. There would be a plaster coat on top of the marble, and then he'd put gold. So now, in order for the plaster to stick well, he had the alternate rows sticking in and out. So the Hegel that Hordus built, of course, no longer exists, but actually we do find when it comes to the walls of the Harabayas, where in particular the Kosel nowadays is one of those walls, they found based on evidence from the stones that fell off the wall, and based on also you can see the Maaris and Achfela building, which Hordus also built, on the top of near the top of the wall, you have a similar kind of thing going in and out. You have they're called pilasters in English. You look at the wall of the Maaris and Achfela, for example, the upper part, you have like pillars sticking out and then going in, sticking out and going in. So they found evidence that the walls of the Harabayas were the same kind of thing. Or now, eventually, when the Romans destroyed the Beis Mikdash, they chiseled away, they knocked down and chiseled away whatever they could, and there's basically none of that left. I think I read someplace there's like one of the houses someplace in the Muslim quarter with a little bit of one of those pilasters left in place. Other than that, they found among some of the stones that had fallen from the walls at the time of the Churban, they found that some of them had been dressed in that way. So this relates to what the Gemara is saying over here, that he did that for the Heichel going in and out, so that then with the purpose of being able to put a coat of plaster over there.
Something about wood that was in the second Beis Hamikdash.
That's the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah, that when Koresh and Daryavash gave permission to build the second Beis Hamikdash, they demanded that wood be included in the walls, with the idea being that way if the Jews rebel, they can burn down the structure. And yeah, the Gemara mentions that in Shloima's Beis Hamikdash there was in the first Beis Hamikdash there was also wood, but one difference is that there it was coated with plaster, and in the second Beis Hamikdash they were saying it should not be, right? But here we're not talking about wood at all. Here we're talking about it was marble, various colors of marble, but then Hordus had it made to go in and out, so that you could put plaster, and then on top of the plaster you'd be able to apply gold. So then he wanted to plate the entire building, the outside of the building, with gold. Amri le Rabbanan, but the Rabbanan, the surviving Chachamim, told him, Shavke, leave it alone, Dehochi Shaper Tfei, it's better like this, it looks nicer like this, with the various colors of marble, Demechse ki Idvasa Diyama, it resembles the waves of the sea. A person you look at the waves, they move back and forth, and your eye, it swims in front of your eyes, and it looks very pleasant, and the same way, it would be with the walls of the Heichel as well. Maharsha points out the symbolism of it is that we know famously that you have Tcheles and Tzitzis, because Tcheles resembles the sea, which in turn resembles the sky, which in turn resembles the Kisei HaKavod. So when a person looks at the Heichel and sees a wave-like pattern, then it puts him in mind ultimately of the Eivishir whose Shchina is there. So that would be a reason for it. So that's that. So that's how Hordus came to rebuild the Beit Hamikdash. Eitz Yosef points out another thing as well. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that the Ovos, or there's a pasuk that refers to the Jewish people as Bas Galim. And the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, Bas Galim means the daughter, the descendant of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, who did as many mitzvahs as the waves of the sea. Or the Medrash in Eicha Rabbah and the Psichta says a little differently, that the waves in the sea are very noticeable in the same way that others are very noticeable in the world. So therefore, this Mikdash, a Heichel that looks like waves, also evokes the schutz of the others. So the Gemara asks, Bava ben Buta, heichi masi le'etzel l'Hordus? How could Bava ben Buta give advice to Hordus how to be mechaper for what he had done by killing the Chachamim? Or the other Girsa in the printed Gemara, heichi oven hachi, how could he do such a thing? Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, or some say Rabbi Yehuda Levi said, why was Daniel punished which the Gemara is going to explain soon, two possibilities of how he was punished. Because he gave advice to Nebuchadnezzar of how to evade his punishment. What happened was Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. Now you have the famous dream of Nebuchadnezzar with a giant statue and all that, but then there's a less well-known one in Perek Dalet of Daniel that describes a dream that Nebuchadnezzar had involved that he saw a gigantic tree, and then he sees a malach coming and ordering that the tree be chopped down and tied up and bound with iron chains and remain like that for a period of time. Daniel explains to Nebuchadnezzar, this symbolizes you become too proud. You don't realize that Eibishter runs the world. Now, for there's going to come a period of time when you are going to become like an animal. You're going to have the mind and the feelings of an animal, and you're going to run off to the forest and live among the animals and eat grass and so on and so forth, until eventually you realize that the Eibishter is boss. So then, having told him that, Daniel says, Lahain Malka, he says, now, king, Nuki Yishbar Allah, let my advice be favorable to you. V'chatoyach b'tzidka furuk, redeem your sins with tzedakah. V'ava yosach, and you deliberate avedas b'meichan anoyin, through having rachmanos on poor people. Hein teve alcha l'shleivsach, and in that way there will be an extension of your peace. In other words, this punishment won't come on you if you start giving tzedakah. Uchtiv, and the Pasuk says, sure enough, Kol Matal Nebuchadnezzar Malka, all of this befell Nebuchadnezzar. Uchtiv, the Pasuk continues, V'l'tzos Yarchen Trey Asar V'Gomer, after 12 months, one day Nebuchadnezzar is walking on the roof of the palace, and he's priding himself, this is the great city Babel that I built with my greatness and all, and Hashem says, that's it, you're a goner now, now your punishment is beginning, and you're becoming an animal and running off to the forest, etc. Now the point is, so in other words, the point is, Nebuchadnezzar would have gotten the punishment right away after the dream. Instead, it was delayed 12 months, because during those 12 months, he was giving tzedakah. The Medrash, by the way, it mentions an interesting detail about that. So he announces that he's going to be giving tzedakah. But first of all, the Gemara over here was criticizing Daniel for doing that, for giving advice to Nebuchadnezzar. The Medrash says that actually Daniel, he knew you're not supposed to give advice to a Rasha to help him evade his punishment, but Daniel had a good reason for it. He knew there were many Jews that had been impoverished by the Golos. They had been rich Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and now they came to Bava with nothing, and at least, Nebuchadnezzar is the one who caused it. At least he should make up to them a little. Anyway, the Medrash tells that actually for the next 12 months, every day, people were lining up at the palace gates and getting tzedakah from Nebuchadnezzar's from Nebuchadnezzar's treasury. Then at the end of the 12 months, when he's walking on the roof one day, he hears a lot of noise from down below. He asks the attendants who are with him, what's all that noise? They tell him it's the poor people who are lining up to get their tzedakah. I should have to give poor people my tzedakah? I used all my money and all my wealth and everything to build up the great city of Babel. And Hashem says, that's it, you're a goner. So the point is, as the Gemara is going to say soon, Daniel was punished for giving that advice to Nebuchadnezzar. Hordus, okay, fine. Hordus is an Eved Kanani. He's chayiv in some mitzvahs, but he was in his own way as horrible as Nebuchadnezzar. How could Baba give him an advice of how he should evade the Eved's punishment for what he did? So the Gemara answers, he boys him a shiny avdra, the chayiv in mitzvahs. One answer is that an Eved, look, he is chayiv in mitzvahs, so he's not of the same caliber as Nebuchadnezzar. Another answer, it's different when it comes to reconstructing the Beis HaMikdash. It's impossible for it to happen without a king involved. Or the Gemara said in the printed Gemara, the Eloi Malchus, if it weren't for the kingship, Loi Misbini, it couldn't be built. And therefore, Ben Baba has an opportunity to tell Hordus, fine, Hordus is now a legitimate king, but he's exercising the office of king, he has an opportunity to get the Beis HaMikdash renovated, then he's going to do it, even if that means telling a Rasha of what he can do to get some points in Hashem's favor and not to be punished. Okay, so the Gemara says, the Daniel Menole Diyanish, where do we see that Daniel was punished? Is it because in the Megillah it says that Esther called Hasoch, va'omarat Hasoch zed Daniel, and then that Hasoch is Daniel, so you see he's being run back and forth as a go-between between Esther and Mordechai, which compared to before, Daniel had been one of the king's top advisors. Well, the Gemara in Megillah gives two different reasons why Daniel was also called by the name Hasoch. One explanation is he was cut down from his greatness. Originally, he had been, a top minister in the times of Nebuchadnezzar, and later on Belshazzar and Dariush, and now he's being demoted to a messenger boy back and forth between Mordechai and Esther.
That's after Achashverosh.
This is Achashverosh's time, right. So in other words, as recently as Belshazzar's times, he had been one of the, and even Dariush's times, he had been one of the top advisors, and now he had been cut down from that. Marsha actually says that even before that, Nebuchadnezzar, after he had interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's first dream, Nebuchadnezzar put him in charge of the whole kingdom. He's basically the Mishnah Melech. Now, afterwards, we find that Belshazzar, when he explained the writing on the wall, Belshazzar offered him that he would rule over one third of the kingdom. So already that's a demotion from the whole kingdom to only one third. And now it's still, so why would it be? So now it works out well. Nebuchadnezzar considered him important enough to make him the Mishnah Lamelech. But now, because he gave Nebuchadnezzar that advice, then later on, in Belshazzar's times, he was demoted. And now we're saying that even later, it was still further. But there's an alternate understanding that he's called Hasach. Either way, they were darshaning Hasach Meloshin Chosach. So either Chosach is cut down from his greatness, or Shekol Dibre Malchus Nechtochin Alpiv. Because everything, all decisions in the kingdom were decided based on him. So therefore, Samayi Kalamemer, then what are you going to say? In what way was he punished? And the answer is Shishut Chul, the Goy Badroyas, because he was thrown into the lion's den. Okay, he survived that, but it was still a terrible, hard thing that he had to go through. Tosfos brings another explanation, actually. The Targum on Megillas Esther explains that Hasoch was actually killed by Haman. You find in the Psukim over there, so Esther sends Hasoch to Mordechai to find out what's going on, why you're wearing sackcloth, and Mordechai tells him to go back to Esther and tell her about the Gzeira, and then Esther sends him back to say, I can't go, Mordechai says, you have to go to Achashverosh, and Esther sends back Hasoch saying, I can't, I haven't been there in 30 days, etc., etc. Then now the Pasuk says, Vayagidu leMordechai es divrei Esther. They told Mordechai what Esther said. Who's they? So the Gemara in Megillah says because Hasoch didn't want to reply back to Mordechai with a negative response like that. Esther doesn't want to go, so he didn't want to go and give that response, and therefore Esther had to find somebody else to bring that message to Mordechai. But Tosfos over here brings from Targum that what happened was Haman saw Hasoch going back and forth between Esther and Mordechai. Now he didn't know the actual relationship between them, but he realized there's something fishy going on, and so he had Hasoch killed. So according to that, Tosfos says that Hasoch, if we say that Hasoch was Daniel, was tremendously punished. He was killed by Haman. But Or Gemara is not taking that view. So Or Gemara is saying either that he was cut down from his greatness and became much lower, or that he was thrown into the lion's den.
I forgot the whole story.
The story of the lion's den is that when Dariush became king after Dariush and Kurdish had overthrown the kingdom of Babel and killed Belshazzar and become the rulers of the new superpower, he appointed Daniel as one of his top ministers. Meanwhile, the other ministers started getting jealous, and they decided to get Daniel in trouble. They came to Dariush with an idea. You're a new king over a great new empire. There are people who didn't know you before. You have to make a law that for the next 30 days nobody is allowed to make any petition to anybody except for you. Like, people should get it into their mind that you are the greatest power that existed in the Gashmius of Aruchnius. Daniel didn't pay attention to that and continued davening, so they mastered on him to Dariush and got him thrown into the lion's den. And of course he survived there, but Derech Nes and those ministers were thrown in there afterwards, but still it was a great hardship that Daniel had to go through. Okay, so the Gemara continues. How could Bava ben Buta give advice to Hordus to demolish the Beis Hamikdash and rebuild it? Didn't we say earlier in the sugya, Rav Chista had said, you're not allowed to tear down a shul, add the bunny Beis Knishta achriti, until you build a new shul? Now, to be sure, Ion Yaakov points out, I mean, the difference is a shul you could have anywhere, the Beis Hamikdash has to be in a particular place. But nevertheless, still, so he says the Tzorich Ion, what the question is. Ben Yoyada says, fine, but Bava should at least told Hurdus, don't tear down the whole thing at once, do it bit by bit. Tear down one wing and then rebuild it, and tear down the next one and rebuild it, and so forth. How is he telling him to tear down the whole thing? So the answer, and so the Gemara says, Yiboyisem Ashani Malchusa Delei Hadrabe. One answer is that the king is not going to change his mind. Regular people, the problem with building with demolishing an old shul and not building a new one is they may get careless, and they may not do it. But a king is not going to do that. A king is not going to get careless. If he commits to something, he's going to follow through with it. D'Amar Shmuel, as Shmuel said the expression, I Amra Malchusa Akau Natura. If the king says, I'm going to uproot a mountain, Akrua, they will uproot that mountain. They're not going to retract it. So first of all, they're not going to change their plans. And second of all, they're not going to run out of resources, and we don't have the resources to move the mountain. So therefore, with Hurdus, both of those factors are true. Ibarisim, Tua, Chazibe, the other answer is that Bava had seen cracks in the Beis Mikdash and knew that's really overdue for repairs, and the Gemara had explained earlier that with a shul also, if you see cracks in it, you see that the building is structurally unsound, then you are allowed to tear it down even before building a new one because you don't want it to collapse, and then you just have to build the new one as fast as possible. So over here, then that was a valid reason for Bava to tell Hurdus to do it that way. Yeah. Yem Mashiach Gola, Yud Tes Tevis. So we have the Chesed Gvura Tiferes. So Tiferes is the sicha that Rebbe was saying on Shabbos, which was Malchus Shabbat Tiferes doing Sfira. So Tiferes is the idea of learning Torah. Malchus Shabbat Tiferes is learning specifically the parts of Torah about Malach Mashiach and Yoni Geula that are explained in many places. So in Torah Shabbat you have so that means in Torah Shabbat, especially as the Rambam points out, the whole Nevi'im is filled with matters involving Mashiach, and in Torah Shabbat Peh, that would mean the various relevant Gemaras and Midrashim, all more so, and especially Pnimiyas HaTorah, starting from the Zohar, especially Torah Sachsidus, the Torah of Rabbi Seinu Nesienu, especially the Mamorim and the Sichas of Nesi Dereinu, which is all a Me'ein, and is all a preparation, and is all a foretaste of the learning of Torah Sashem Mashiach, the Torah Chadashim Eti Teitzei, and then when we continue, when we increase in learning in Yoni Mashiach HaGola, this Malchus Shidur Tiferes, then as it says in Pirkei Avos, to Ezu Derech Yishara, what is the straight way for a person, Tiferes Loisev, Tiferes Lamin Adam, that it's a Derech HaYishara to accomplish that Mashiach will be revealed, and Mashiach will come, and the Geula will come upon Yom HaMashiach. Continuing with Halachos of Netilas Yadayim in the morning. So now, after you wash your hands in the morning, you don't actually have to dry your hands. You're allowed to say the bracha al Netilas Yadayim without drying your hands. The same thing is true of all other brachas. There's an exception when it comes to washing for bread, and there it's not even so much that you have to dry your hands for the sake of the bracha, it's more that you're not allowed to eat the bread with wet hands, because then that makes the bread disgusting. Technically also in the morning, you only have to wash your fingers. Nevertheless, it's better to wash them up to the wrist. On Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, then we follow the Ikar Adin, and therefore Taka, we wash only up to our knuckles. Okay, this Netilas Yadayim in the morning, you shouldn't wash it onto the ground, wash it into a keli, which is why we have a Negolas or Shisul. It's better that it should be, that bottom keli should be an offensive one. That way the water won't be used for anything else, because in the Netilas Yadayim water, you're just supposed to spill out. So if it's not to Dova Moris, then fine. Afterwards you go and you take it to the bathroom and you spill it out over there. So in connection with that, then that water that was used for the Netilas Yadayim, you're not allowed to use it for any other purpose. You're not allowed to have enough from it, because the Ruach Ra, the whole point was, you had the Ruach Ra on the hands, which now gets transferred to the Netilas Yadayim water. For that reason, also, it shouldn't be left in the house. In fact, in the footnote over here, it mentions from Rav Chaim Noah, from Ketzos HaShulchan, that you shouldn't even be saying brachas, or words of Torah, where there's uncovered negolah, where there's uncovered used negolaser. So you shouldn't leave them over. You should also be careful, though, don't just pour them on the water, on the floor, in the house, or any other place that people walk on, because a person walks on it might be harmed. So you pour it down the sink, and if you pour it in the sink or in the toilet, if you pour it in the sink, then rinse off the sink afterwards. This way you don't have any of that ruach ra left. Okay, you wash your right hand first, because as explained in an earlier simon, the right is almost always more important than the left. Now, on the other hand, though, you want to have, if possible, the Zohar explains that it's better to have that the water for purifying your hands should come from the right hand. So therefore, what you do is you take the negovaser kvort in your right hand, you put it in your left hand, and then you pour with your left hand first on your right hand. So that way it's coming from your right hand, and you're also pouring first on your right hand. Now, if somebody else is washing you negovaser, it shouldn't be somebody who himself has not washed yet, because just like with Parah Adumah water, he's our Torah ala Tomei, the Torah one should be sprinkling on the Tomei, not the other way around, so therefore you shouldn't have someone whose hands themselves are Tomei is going to be washing you negovaser.